Well, here we are. Passover is approaching, not very far off. As was said, a couple of weeks. We're at that season of the year where we need to pause and reflect and in some cases answer some important questions. There is an underlying question at this season of the year that I expect many of us have run into from time to time, especially if you have Jewish friends or, for that matter, within our own belief system, there are people who aren't sure whether the Passover is early on the 14th or late on the 14th. And that issue comes up from time to time. There are prominent ministers in our genre who advocate the idea that the New Testament Passover wasn't really the Passover. It was merely a pre-Passover meal. You might have heard of that. It's made its rounds. And it's based largely on a series of reinterpretations that has a long history. It goes back clear to the return of the Jews from their exile in Babylon. The 15th Passover goes back to later perceptions of the Exodus experience and the series of events just before it. It came to be common practice in the post-exile period. That would be about the 4th century B.C., and it remained so through the time of Christ, through the early New Testament period, and for that matter, to the present day. There are people who assert that there never was such a controversy in the first century, but we're going to see that there was. The New Testament narrative says otherwise. We have well-known individuals, peoples whose names are well known to us, who advocate this position or, to some degree, reflect on the position of the question as to which time is the appropriate time or the correct time to observe the Passover. I have it on good authority and from some people who have known these individuals, whose initials are HLH, MK, RLD, and JR, and I did a transcript of a JR message one time. Went on for 3 hours. I thought he'd never finish. But he was a strong advocate for the late Passover tradition. And I remember one of his assertions that he shouted out, Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob always kept the Passover on the 15th. And now think about that. The youngest of those three men died 200 years before there was a Passover. How could he make such an assertion? But anyway, that was just one of the people that I've looked at as to what their position was and how they justify it. But it's something we need to be aware of. There is this controversy, even though there are people who allege that there was no such difference of opinion in Jesus' day. Well, there was. But does the New Testament weigh in on this particular question? Does it add confirmation one way or the other? I want to go through a bunch of scriptures, and I'm going to go through these rather quickly, so hopefully we can put them on the board to save us time, because there's quite a few of them. But these are all of the passages of New Testament scripture that mention the Passover. I'm going to start in Matthew chapter 26. In verse 2, it says, Now you know that after 2 days is the feast of the Passover, and the Son of Man is betrayed to be crucified. Now, that's the first mention. Seems like an innocent statement. Very clear, very obvious. But there's a hidden point of interest in that passage. Did you notice what it is? He says that it's on the Passover that he is going to be betrayed to be crucified. And this is a direct quote of Jesus Christ himself. So the betrayal is going to occur on the Passover. So that he was not betrayed after he died on the cross. Does that tell you something? It's just a side point. But things like that we need to pay attention to. Now let's move on in chapter Matthew 26, down to verse 17. Now the first day of the Feast of Unleavened Bread, the disciples came to Jesus saying unto him, "Where will you that we prepare for you to eat the Passover?" They understood. Why would they call it that if the Passover was still a day off? The time of their eating. Verse 18, the next verse to that one. And he said, "Go unto the city to such a man and say unto him, the master says, my time is at hand. I will keep the Passover at your house with my disciples." And here again, Matthew is quoting Jesus directly. Verse 19. And the disciples did as Jesus had appointed them, and they made ready the Passover. Why would you? Now, the Passover, let's understand, the Passover has its specific requirements, its specific features. There's things you do that are important. Why would they make those arrangements if this were not actually the Passover? And then verse 20, we have another piece of interesting, subtle information. It says, "Now when the even was come, he sat down with the 12. Why would there be a specific time mentioned if it weren't important, if it weren't relevant? When the even was come. Passover is an evening observance. We know that. Virtually every observer of the Passover or any remnant of it recognizes that this was an evening occasion. In Egypt, it was late in the day up until the time of midnight. And we need to ask which midnight was that, but we'll leave that aside for the moment. But when even was come, he sat down with the 12. Let's move to Mark chapter 14. And here again, this is a poorly translated, but we understand. Verse 1, "And after 2 days was the feast of the Passover and of unleavened bread." Now that's an interesting verse because it makes the distinction between the two. In the Jewish world, it wouldn't necessarily be distinct. They call the whole week Passover, but that's just Jewish tradition. But here it makes the distinction, and that distinction is important to understand. "But after 2 days was the feast of the Passover and of unleavened bread, and the chief priests and the scribes sought how they might take him by craft and put him to death," which, of course, would be before the first holy day, there, the beginning of their Passover. Move down to verse 12. "And the first day of unleavened bread," or I should say as the season of unleavened bread was approaching, "when they killed the Passover, his disciples said unto him, where will you that we go and prepare that you may eat the Passover?" Verse 14, "And wheresoever he shall go in, say you to the good man of the house, the master says, where is the guest chamber where I shall eat the Passover with my disciples?" He calls it the Passover again. Mark is quoting him directly. Down to verse 16. And the disciples went forth and came into the city and found as he said unto them, and they made ready the Passover. It's a special occasion. It has distinct elements to it. It was not just a meal. That's the point that we need to get from this. Let's move to Luke chapter 22. Now the feast of unleavened bread drew nigh. Okay, this is the approach of the season, which is called Passover. The unleavened bread is not really Passover, but that's a mistaken term that exists in the religious world. Passover is the day before, as we saw in the verse above. Verse 7 of Luke 22. Then came the day of unleavened bread when the Passover must be killed. Okay, this is the slaying of the lambs, and it's just in the advance of the day of unleavened bread. In fact, the day before. With either tradition, it's the day before. That we know, even though there's a translational anomaly there. Verse 8, and he sent Peter and John, saying, go and prepare us the Passover that we may eat. And here again is a direct quote of Jesus Christ by Luke. Go down to verse 11. And you shall say unto the good man of the house, the master says unto you, where is the guest chamber where I shall eat the Passover with my disciples? Here again, quoting Jesus Christ himself. Verse 13. And they went and found as he had said unto them, and they made ready the Passover. Verse 14, and when the hour was come. So the Passover has a specific time to begin. It wasn't just any time. They waited until a specific moment in time to begin. When the hour was come, he sat down the 12 apostles with him. And he said unto them, with desire I have desired to eat this Passover with you before I suffer. Again, quoting him directly. And in verse 19, he says, this do in remembrance of me. A very important occasion. But the question was this really the Passover? Now we have the Passover in these passages that I've read to you. We have had it mentioned 10 times, calling it the Passover. It calls it no other name whatsoever. Every time it's clear. And it's Pascha, Strong's number 3957. No question. The word was Passover. He called it the Passover. He was quoted calling the Passover 6 times by Matthew, Mark, and Luke. Now, that may not seem like all that big a deal, but keep in mind, the gospel writers wrote some 20 years after the fact. They're not writing this as it happened. This was their reflection from years later, a couple of decades later. They never thought to call it by any other name. So keep that in mind, because it strengthens the New Testament witness as to what that occasion was that they were observing. Now, when we get to the Gospel of John, there's a different approach, and keep in mind, John wrote some 40 years after the others. He wrote quite late. And John brings out the distinction between the two traditions. John calls it the Passover of the Jews, making it clear that there was a difference here. John chapter 2, verse 13, and the Jews' Passover was at hand, and Jesus went up to Jerusalem. This is in the days just before that season. Verse 23 of John 2. Now when he was in Jerusalem at the Passover, in the feast day, many believed in his name when they saw the miracles which he did. Now this was a Passover many years prior to the year of his crucifixion. Move on to John chapter 6. John maintains that distinction, and the Passover, a feast of the Jews, was nigh. John chapter 11, verse 55. And the Jews' Passover was nigh at hand, and many went out of the country up to Jerusalem before the Passover to purify themselves. John is maintaining the distinction between the two traditions. The Jews called the whole week of unleavened bread Passover. They do to this day. You'll see it on calendars. Of course, we understand that Passover is the 14th. The days of unleavened bread are the next 7 days, beginning on the 15th. But the Jews called that feast season Passover. That's all. Just, we need to understand that. John chapter 12, verse 1. Then Jesus, 6 days before the Passover, came to Bethany, where Lazarus was, which had been dead, whom he raised from the dead. Chapter 13, verse 1. Now before the feast of the Passover, when Jesus knew that his hour was come, that he should depart out of this world, the Father, having loved his own which were in the world, he loved them unto the end. John 18, 28. Then led they Jesus from Caiaphas unto the hall of judgment. And that hall of judgment is going to be interesting later on when I read something. And it was early, and they themselves went in, not into the judgment hall, lest they should be defiled, but that they might eat the Passover, showing that their Passover was a day later. That's why this concern of theirs. Verse 39, same chapter. But you have... I'm going to skip that one. John 19:14. John 19:14. And it was the preparation of the Passover, and about the sixth hour, which would be roughly noon, and he said unto the Jews, Behold your king. Now, keep in mind John's orientation and how he wrote, calling attention to the two different traditions. This is the preparation of the Passover, which would have been the day before the 15th. And that confirms, of course, that the crucifixion was on the 14th, the day that we call Passover, though the Passover itself was the previous evening, the start of the day. Paul in 1 Corinthians 5, verse 7, makes a reference back to this occasion, where he says, Purge out, therefore, the old leaven, that you may be a new lump, as you are unleavened, for even Christ, our Passover, is sacrificed for us. I don't think that's a controversial point. The thing is, Paul is referring to the Passover, him being our Passover. And then in 1 Corinthians 11, verse 23, and this is a flashback to what we read in I think it was Matthew. For I have received of the Lord that which also I delivered unto you. Paul had this instruction firsthand. Do we realize that? That the Lord Jesus, the same night in which he was betrayed, took bread. And in verse 24, he says again, This do in remembrance of me. And that was a reflection back to Luke 22:19. And also a reflection back to the very first scripture that I opened with, where Matthew says, You know that after 2 days is the feast of the Passover, and the Son of Man is betrayed to be crucified. He was saying that he was going to be crucified, he's going to be betrayed in the Passover day itself, not some other time. So that locks in the time frame, if we noticed. So these passages that I've read to you speak of the event, their observance, as Passover 10 times. They quoted Jesus himself, his own words, 6 times. The 3 New Testament witnesses all agree, and Paul reaffirmed their narratives by reflecting back and using some of the same phraseology. And of course, as I mentioned earlier, the Synoptic Gospel writers wrote some 20 years after the fact. This was in the early 50s AD. In that period of time, no changes were made to the phraseology or the terminology that they used. And there was no change for another decade or so to the time when Paul wrote. It was all called the Passover. It was not a pre-Passover meal. That's how people explain it away. But the New Testament affirms otherwise. Now, did Jesus know when the Passover was? Was he reading the Old Testament scriptures and realizing that the Passover in Egypt was at midnight on the 15th? People like to say the death angel passed over and killed the firstborn. Scripture doesn't say that. It said the Lord passed over. He was the one who passed over. I think he would have known when it was, would he not? Any question in his mind? Did he have to argue about Old Testament scriptures to figure out when it was? He was there. He did it. He was the Lord who passed over and took the lives of the disobedient and the firstborn of Egypt. Now, I introduced this thought a moment ago, and let's think about it. Which midnight was it? Okay? Even from today's points of view, which midnight did that passing over occur on? You can work the scenarios through in your mind however you want to. But if it was the 15th, when you read the narratives, when you read the Old Testament accounts of the Exodus, you realize those people were on their way out of there long before midnight on the 15th. So there's a problem, a number of problems. My booklet on Passover of the Exodus, Passover and the Exodus experience, will cover a lot of those points. But we need to realize that there are problems if you push the midnight into the next midnight. What we need to understand is the New Testament provides potent confirmation not only of when Jesus and his disciples observed the Passover, but the fact that that's actually what it was, not a question. And then there's that passage in Luke 22 where it says, when the hour was come. This event, whatever you want to call it, has a specific hour when it's to begin. There's a specific start time. Now, did you ever notice in these New Testament accounts, there's never a hint of explanation of why he was keeping it earlier, why he was keeping on a different time? The apostles never asked that question. They didn't need to ask. They offered no explanation to those of us who've lived in later generations. Why were they keeping it at the wrong time, if it was the wrong time? No explanation. Does that tell you something? The disciples didn't need to ask. This wasn't their first rodeo. They'd done this before in years past, at least 2, maybe 3 times they observed the Passover with him in prior years. They didn't need to ask. And for some reason, they didn't think they needed to explain to any of us. So that's something also to think about. And if it wasn't the Passover, then what specific preparations would they know to make? And why would they need to assemble at a specific place by themselves? And why limit it to just the 12 disciples at the time. There's all of these factors that we got to think about that raise questions. Would something as important as a shift in the time for keeping the Passover go without mention? Now, there are some prominent leaders in our belief system who think that, well, the Passover back in Egypt was on the 15th, but Christ changed it to the 14th. And even though they believe that, they keep it as we do earlier on the 14th. But that idea also reinforces the late Passover kind of thinking. Why didn't they mention the change? Well, there was no reason to. But what's also interesting, and I brought this out right at the beginning, he revealed in advance that he would be betrayed at Passover. Think about that. He was to be betrayed at Passover. When was he betrayed? We know when he was betrayed. It was between their last observance of the Old Testament format and the reintroduction of the New Testament format of bread and wine and foot washing. Judas left before the foot washing. He went to the high priests and betrayed Jesus Christ, not only in Passover day, but at the Passover itself. You know, these scriptures, they're easy to gloss over and not pick up the detail of what it's talking about. So Jesus, right then and there, is quoted as referring to this night being the Passover, the night in which he was betrayed. And Paul confirmed that in his epistle. So did the apostles get it all wrong, just the same? Matthew, Mark, and Luke, they all wrote the same thing. No variation of terminology, no hint that it's called anything other than what it is. Did they get it wrong? Let me ask you this one. Does Jesus Christ not have control over what was put in his word? Is this inspired or not? Did they stick a word in there that they shouldn't have? Did he not correct? Did no, you know, for the next 40, 50 years, did nobody correct this? Was this inspired or not? Did Jesus Christ have the control over what his disciples and apostles were putting into his word? Okay, have we thought about that? 10 times they called it the Passover. Guess why? Because that's what it was. Let's not fool around. Let's not say this thing got out of hand and they borrowed some other ideas from somewhere else and Jesus Christ didn't know about it and he didn't fix it. No, come on. Let's be honest with ourselves. The word is the word. And then, of course, his beloved John calls attention to another little problem area that the Jewish tradition differed from the early Christian tradition. Okay? He makes that distinction. He also points out the fact that is still true to this day, the error of the Jews calling the 7 days of unleavened bread Passover. There's no such thing. Passover is the day before the 15th. But it's traditional error. They call the whole week Passover week. You'll hear that. Okay, if that's what they want to call it, fine. But let's be honest with what it really is. The early church had no question as to the correct timing of the observance or what to call it. The inclusion of a Lamb Supper continued for another 3 decades. That's what we read of in 1 Corinthians 11, where things were getting a little rowdy, they were getting a little out of hand, Paul had to correct them. They brought their own wine. they brought their own lamb dinners. They were eating interfamilially, if you want to say that. They were little groups by themselves, and it was getting rowdy. Some would eat ahead of the others, and some would have a little too much of that Passover wine. Paul had to correct them. He had to stop the traditional observance, which was going on for a whole generation after the crucifixion. He boiled it down to the simple, basic element that we observe today, which is the observance that begins with the foot washing and the participation or the partaking of the bread and the wine. The old Jewish Passover observance with the bitter herbs and roast lamb and the formal presentations of the cups of wine and all of that was passé from this point on. They got kind of rowdy. Paul realized this was inappropriate, and he had to rein it in. They were acting like a bunch of vultures at a carcass. Okay, have you ever seen them going in there? That event where he calls the fowl of the air to come to the carcasses of the dead after a battle, he calls that the great Lord's Supper. Paul says, we're not here to eat the Lord's Supper. So that's not what we should call it. The problem was they were acting like a bunch of vultures around the carcass. It was very inappropriate. And that's why he said, we're not to eat that or that way. That's why he changed the decorum, and he brought it around to something more appropriate to the occasion. This we do in memory of him, his death. It's a solemn occasion. It's not a party. It's not a party atmosphere. It's to be observed reverently, which, of course, is entirely appropriate. Now, I found some information, and I've known this for many years, but I never looked into it as thoroughly as in preparation for this message. But it's found in Fred Coulter's book, Christian Passover. And if you don't have one, I have two extra copies. I forgot to bring them today, but I will get a copy to you if you would like. And those of us who have a copy might be willing to loan it to someone who has never seen one before. But what I'm going to read is from his chapter 29 of the Christian Passover book. Well, it starts in page 378 and goes on for several more. But let me read it to you. It's under a subtitle. It says, The Significance of the Events at the Time of Jesus' Death. Now, there's people that make the connection and the fact that Christ died about 3 o'clock in the afternoon on the 14th. They use that to suggest that it was the same hour as back in Egypt. That's one of the things that they use to support that point of view. What people don't realize is what was going on while Jesus Christ was on the cross. And this is what I want to read to you. This may be new information. You may have never heard this before. But let me read what Fred says in his booklet, and he's quoting some others too, a man named Martin and another man named Edersheim. But let me read it here. The unparalleled events that took place during the crucifixion of Jesus Christ were a divine manifestation of the termination of the old covenant. While Jesus was dying on the cross in pain and agony, 4 spectacular events took place. These 4 events were: darkness covered Jerusalem and the entire geographical area for roughly 3 hours. The second thing is the veil of the temple was ripped down the middle from top to bottom. And if you understand the dimensions and the thickness of this thing, that is physically impossible for any human being to do. The third thing that happened, a great earthquake shook Jerusalem. And I might add to that, at the moment of his death. Fourth thing that happened, in conjunction with the tearing of the veil, the huge brass doors of the holy place behind the veil were opened by invisible hands. These are huge, massive, heavy doors. All these events had a great impact on the temple ceremonies, which were scheduled for that day, including the traditional temple sacrifice of the Passover lambs. Matthew and Luke record the approximate time of these phenomenal events. The first event was the tremendous darkness which blotted out the sun. Now think of the impact that would have on the temple ceremonies at the time, which included offering the afternoon, what they call the evening sacrifice, which had to be completed before they could begin the Passover sacrifice. So there was a progression there. That progression was delayed by this darkness. And this is not just an eclipse or something like that where you can still see. I think it correlates to Genesis 15, which talks about the horror of great darkness that came over Abraham at this same moment in time, back in the giving of the Abrahamic covenant. Moving down, Fred continues, the phenomenal events that followed the period of darkness must have completely disrupted the scheduled killing of the Passover lambs. These events occurred at the same time that Jesus died, about the ninth hour. The word about implies that it was immediately before the ninth hour, just before the darkness ended, and about or near the ninth hour, when Jesus cried out with a loud voice, saying, Eli, Eli, lama sabachthani, which is translated for us, my God, why have you forsaken me? And not only is the what he said translated for us, but the local witnesses preserved for us the phonetic sound. They said, let him alone. Let's see if Elijah comes to save him. So they heard a word that sounded like Elijah. Then another took a spear and thrust it into his side, and out came water and blood. And after crying out again with a loud voice, Jesus yielded up his spirit. And suddenly, the veil of the temple was ripped in two from top to bottom. And the earth shook, and the rocks were fractured. It's in Matthew 27. Moving down. The earthquake and the ripping of the veil occurred immediately after Jesus died, just before the lambs were, just before the lambs were scheduled to be killed at the temple. These phenomenal events had a significant effect on the functions that were in progress at the temple. When the veil of the temple split, those who were assembling to kill their Passovers, the people would bring their Passover lambs to the temple to be slain, and then take it home and roast it. That's what was the usual procedure. When the veil of the temple split, those who were assembling to kill their Passover lambs, and we're talking about hundreds, thousands, had to immediately leave the area because the holy place was exposed to their view. Another subparagraph, no Passover lambs could be sacrificed at the temple on that day. With the veil ripped in two and the open brass doors exposing the holy place to view of all, the entire temple area must have been thrown into complete disarray. The Jews who were preparing to sacrifice their Passover lambs had to clear the temple area. It was impossible for the priests to begin the sacrifice of the Passover lambs. Catch that? It was impossible. They could not go ahead with their Passover. This is a different one. It was later. By law, the temple area was rendered ceremoniously unavailable or unclean and unfit for service from the time that the veil was ripped in two and the brass doors to the holy place were opened, exposing it to public view. From the moment the earthquake struck, all operations at the temple had to cease immediately until the damage could be repaired and the temple could be ceremonially cleansed and rededicated, and that would have taken weeks. A near hysterical mass exodus from the temple area must have taken place as the people fled in terror. Now, understanding the geography here, as they were going to the temple with their paschal lambs, they had their backs to where the cross was. When they had to flee the grounds, they turned around and now they're facing where the cross was. Okay, there's subtleties that we don't realize, and these facts are preserved in history. From another page, indeed, everything seems to indicate that although the earthquake might furnish the physical basis, the rent of the temple veil was, with reverence be it said, really made by the hand of God. And that's from a quote from Edersheim's book, The Life and Times of Jesus the Messiah, page 611. I have a copy of that book. It's quite thick, but it's worth having because he has historical details and information that fill in the background of what's going on in the world at that time. Another quote, that some great catastrophe betokening the impending destruction of the temple had occurred in the sanctuary about this very time is confirmed by not less than four mutually independent testimonies, those of Tacitus, of Josephus, of the Talmud, and of early Christian tradition. These facts were known at least back then. Another couple of quotes. As we compute, it may just have been the time when at the evening sacrifice, which was always completed before the temple sacrifice of the Passover lambs began, the officiating priesthood entered the holy place, either to burn the incense or to do other sacred service there. To see before them the veil of the holy place rent from top to bottom, that beyond it they could scarcely have seen, and hanging in two parts from the fastening above and at the side, was indeed a terrible portent, which would soon become generally known and must in some form or other have been preserved in tradition. Talking about the historical record. And they all must have understood that it meant that God's own hands had rent the veil, because it would be a physical impossibility for anyone to do that. This thing was thick. It was huge. And no one could even reach the top. It was up there some 50 feet. This thing is a massive, massive curtain. And they all must have understood that it meant that God's own hand had rent the veil and forever deserted and thrown open the most holy place. And this again is from Edersheim, The Life and Times of Jesus the Messiah, page 611 and 12. Because the ripping of the veil and the opening of the brass door to the holy place occurred before the ninth hour, when the killing of the Passover lambs was scheduled to begin, that would be the normal time, it is evident that no Passover lambs were killed at the temple on that day that Jesus died. God the Father openly intervened and repudiated the tradition. And catch this. Here's the big one. God the Father openly intervened and repudiated the traditional temple sacrifice of the Passover lambs. God had never commanded it in the first place. The traditional 14th-15th Passover did not honor God. It was a self-righteous tradition that the Jews were observing in place of the commands of God, and he rejected it in a powerful and dramatic way. Do you want to know why Jesus Christ died in the middle of the afternoon? It wasn't to connect with Egypt. It wasn't to affirm Egyptian tradition or the idea that the Passover in Egypt was later. That wasn't the point at all. It was to repudiate the false Passover of the Jews of the day. That's why the timing. Okay? It was not for something for us to use to allege that Passover should be kept the next evening. Bad idea. So what's the significance of the hour of Jesus' death? It wasn't a correlation with anything that happened in Egypt. It was another factor entirely. It coincided with the majority's incorrect tradition. Now, there were two traditions. There was the Sadducean tradition, which was early 14th. And that's why the man was carrying the water pot. Carrying water was normally a woman's job. But for a man to be carrying a water pot, that would stand out. Because for the Passover ceremonies, a man had to do those duties. And Jesus Christ knew it. How he knew it, we don't know. But he knew that there would be such a person. And he knew why it was happening. Another little detail that we don't pick up. But it was an allusion to the fact that there were two Passover traditions. One, the night before. The Jews selected their Passover lambs on the 10th. And wouldn't you know it, his triumphal entry into Jerusalem, and that's in Mark 11, was on the 10th. The earthquake occurred at the moment of his expiration. He didn't do it. He was dead and unconscious at the moment. It had to have been the Father. The veil of the temple was torn from above, top to bottom. The Holy of Holies was exposed to view. And the tearing of that veil was humanly impossible. The darkness, delayed by up to 3 hours, the offering of the evening sacrifice, which had to be completed before the Passover sacrificing could begin. So the traditional lamb slaying was preempted that year. The temple grounds became off limits to anyone. So any perceptions of a normal year that year are purely delusional. That year was no normal year by any stretch. There were so many things that were happening in the background that are only alluded to in the pages of Scripture. But there were so many things that affirmed that God the Father and Jesus Christ were saying, this Passover, not that one. Do we get the message? Is that clear? Now, I've tried to stay entirely in the New Testament with this presentation. We don't need to argue over words. We don't need to argue what evening means. Evening is a generic term. It can cover a span of time. It's not stopwatch specific. People try to make it that to offer reasons for different conclusions. And there's many words that run into the same problem. But let's keep in mind, this occasion is important. And when we observe it is equally important. What if the children of Israel in Egypt happened to keep the Passover a day late? What do you suppose the consequences would have been? Is there a modern correlation to that question? That's what we need to know. Now, with the observance of the Passover, we are going to recommit ourselves to the covenant that we made, the covenant of baptism. Let's take that as seriously as we ought to, because it is important. Jesus Christ said to his disciples, and this was a simple little matter, what's the big deal? If I wash you not, talking about washing their feet, if I wash you not, you have no part with me. Is that important? Is he serious? Are we serious? That's the question. Have an enjoyable Passover. It's coming soon.